KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of the 37th Annual Portland International Film Festival. This festival is the largest film event in Oregon, featuring over 100 international shorts and feature films. The films will be shown at a variety of Portland theaters from February 6th through the 22nd. More information about these films, dates, and locations can be found at kboo.fm and click on the right side of the page under Community Events.
And the time is 10 o'clock, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, and it's time for the Firesign Theater Radio Hour.
Supermarket. Attention, all money savers in the Richmond, Syracuse, Tri-City area, and all you wonderful people out at Ed Siegelman's Ground Zero Equal Opportunity Apartments. Yes, our manager, Darwin Paul, has opened up his pants early this Christmas to let you in for the biggest in unhealable deep cut discounts. Now, agglutinated beans, giant and hypo size, 2 for $0.47. Ma Rainey's Moleskin Cookies, buy the tin at $1.87. Save on Peach Pits, this week only, see our boy at the back. Dog food for the doggy? Well, doggone it, we've got all six varieties of Martyr Brand kidney and beef offal. Talk to Charlie Crane Pool, Ed's dad, at our liquor department about choice USDA bourbon and rump roast cocktail party mix. Last and least, there's plenty of seasick fresh produce at our vegetable counter. Don't worry about the flies, we won't weigh them. So wary shoppers, take the lift out of life and drop your load on the giant toad. We give double discounted multiple identity stamps.
Is there anything on the TV?
Let me take a look at the TV guide.
Have you got the TV guide?
I'll warm up the set.
Do you
buy
grapefruit? As you are thanking me.
Oh, thank you.
Doesn't that change your heart, friends? Don't
certainly
you feel
does.
Your heart burning?
Oh, I can feel it.
Can you feel a change? Are you full? Don't you feel the change is there, friend?
Oh, right on, Dale.
Are you changing,
I am
changing with the times, so let's meet him.
Well, Jerry, our next famous fall guy is still putting his art in cans from Canada to Kashmir. Winner of the Academy's coveted Good Sport Award in 1956 for Excellence in Hollywood, meet George Leroy Tirebiter.
Hubba, hubba, George. What a suit. Well, it's nice to see you looking like you're back on your feet again, George, and ready to play our little game again.
Thank you very much.
George, first a tip for our viewers, maybe. How does an old man like you stay alive?
Well, sir, I try to get up every morning and watch television all day, Mr.
Do Yellow. You have a special diet, George?
I don't eat.
You don't eat?
No, but it hasn't affected my appetite.
Well, George,
you don't have any little groat clusters I can chew on, maybe, do you?
Later, George. You won't want to eat in a minute after you turn your back and get ready for this stab from the past.
Oh, my.
All right, George. Now, you remember all those lovable, stupid Porgy and Mudhead movies you were responsible for?
My goodness, I haven't seen any of those in years.
Well, Georgie, what are you going to do when the original Bottles, Mudhead's crazy hopped-up girlfriend, drops right through that celebrity trap door?
Oh, no, that woman's trying to kill me.
Let's talk about your car. It's screaming, wash me, please. Now, if you're a Mr. Common Sense, you won't believe me when I tell you that I've got an envelope that'll clean your car while you're driving at home to work. Well, George, believe me, this time, because this one isn't like the Austrian self-sharpening razors. No, friends, no overheating like with the tropical fishes. No zizzing and dripping like with the dike.
I don't want it anymore, Dr. Gunderson.
Don't want what, child?
My coffee. The warden says he's tired of my coffee.
Well, it's been pretty clear that your coffee don't got zest appeal.
Zest appeal? What's that?
I don't know.
Oh.
That's the secret ingredient in Arizona Brothers coffee. Yeah, look here.
Huh?
A blend of the finest Brazilian soya beans, Chilean chicory nuts, and Spanish flies.
Oh.
Here, take this can home with you, Katie.
The next morning...
More coffee.
Oh, I think I've had enough.
Ersatz Brothers Coffee, the real one. Look for the can in the plain brown can.
I'd in any way want to put myself into a confrontatory position, either with the United Snakes or with them. And you can believe me, because I never lie, and I'm always right. So wake up and take a look at your only logical choice. Me, George Tirebiter.
Paid for by the Tirebiter for Political Solutions Committee, Sector R.
This is you, TV, for you, the viewer. The Howl of the Wolf movie. Presenting honest stories of working people as told by rich Hollywood stars. This morning's wacky feature, Porgy and Mudhead in High School Madness, with Dave Kasman as Porgy and Joe Bertman as Mudhead.
Porgy, Tirebiter, he's a spy and a girl delighter. Porgy, firefighter, he's a student like you. If you're looking for a captain of the ring ball team, you can bet he won't be there. You'll find him popping off at Pop's Sodium Shop to trim a red with red hair. Doobie-doo-ah, Porgy, Tirebiter, just a student like you.
Like me?
Just a student like you.
Stop singing and finish your homework.
Just a student like you.
Yes, that's right. This is the final Fire Sign Show. Your eyes did not deceive you if you read the program on the website. But Fire Sign will always be on KABU. It's kind of its natural environment, late night radio and stuff. But tonight we have a special treat for you, and I'm joined by Ken Jones.
Hello, Rich.
Hey, there he is. And what we're gonna play something really special. You brought a surprise for us, didn't you?
Yeah, it's an interview with the Fire Sign Theater that I did in my younger days, actually in high school. So this was from November 1970.
Whoa.
And you want to know a little bit about how it came about, you know, how this 17-year-old got to meet the Fire Sign Theater. I was a big fan at the time. I had a friend in high school turn me on to the Dwarf album, which had come out that summer, I think.
Which we just heard an excerpt from.
Exactly, yeah. So July 1970. And you know, it was one of those mind-blowing events, like listening to the Beatles for the first time,
right,
or something like that. There was nothing like it, and even today, you know, there's not too many things like the Fire Sign Theater. They were unique.
Sadly.
Yes, I just fell in love with the group and what they were doing with Dwarf, and they happened to be on the radio in Los Angeles. I went to high school in Los Angeles, and they were on KPPC. Then they got fired from there, and they went to another community radio station, KPFK, which they pronounce KPF-K, and that's where they did the Dear Friends segments, which you've been playing for the past few months. And I called them up. I don't even remember who I talked to, but anyway, they said to come on down to the studio. It was a Sunday evening. I went down there with my sister. My friend Steve Edelman drove us.
On a school night?
Yeah, school night.
Yeah.
I had my cassette recorder, and it was a cheap cassette recorder. I had extra batteries and blank cassettes and everything. I had a very long list of questions, which when you hear the interview, you'll see at one point they just lost patience with me and took the list of questions and went down it and answered the ones that they that they preferred. And what we did was we went down there. So it was on Highland Boulevard in Los Angeles. Again, Steve drove us, and we met them before the show. The interview was supposed to be after the show. So they do Dear Friends Live. And they were extremely nice to us. I can't emphasize enough how nice these guys are.
Yeah.
You know, I think they're comic geniuses, but they're extremely good people.
Yes.
Made me feel very welcome. And actually, Peter Bergman said, hey, I've got a skit that I'm doing tonight. Can you tell me what you think? So he started reading the first skit you played tonight, the Giant Toad Market.
Oh, right, yeah.
And he had that bit there about, I've got it down here. He had a character, Charlie Cranepool, what was it, talk to Charlie Crane Pool at a liquor department about choice USDA bourbon and rump roast cocktail party mix. And I said, I was a Mets fan, a baseball fan. So I said, oh, Charlie Crane Pool, there's a guy on the Mets named Ed Crane Pool. He plays first base. Bergman was not a baseball fan, so he'd never heard of him. But when that went on the air, he went, talk to Charlie Crane Pool, Ed's dad.
Ah,
so my one claim to fame.
That's awesome.
Two words on a Firesign Theater album or in the
bit.
Hey,
you can get that. That's immortality. That's
but
cool.
Again, I mean, it was just so nice of him just to kind of, the 17-year-old kid and my sister and my friend, he was just reading it and seeing, you know, what do you think? And,
right.
And then he did it live on the air. Anyway, we met them after they did the show. I think the show was about an hour. And I had my long list of questions, as the listeners will hear. And I was, you know, very tentative about it, but I had the questions to kind of get me through it. And they just started, you know, riffing, as you'll find.
Oh,
I mean,
gosh.
I could have just said hello,
yeah, just hang
and they
on.
Would have taken over for the next 30 minutes. So I think that's what you'll hear on the interview now.
And it's awesome. I listened to it, too. It's pretty incredible. I think you guys are in
Yeah, I did want to say one more thing, though, Rich, before we got into it. The Dwarf album, and this will be in the interview, it's a lot about high school.
Right.
So the big thing is there's the movie which we heard was High School Madness with Porgy and Mudhead, those
right.
lovable characters. And there's two high schools in there, Communist Martyrs and
right.
and More Science, and I think More Science disappears somewhere in there. And in the interview, Peter Bergman, what he seems very interested that I'm in high school, asked me all about it. And, you know, he calls it jail,
right.
the kind of a forced education system. And he said the album really had a lot to do with high school, and he was trying to reach that demographic at the time. He felt that was the future of America.
Well, he really nailed it. At least really weird high school kids, smart and weird kids.
there were at least a few of us at the time.
Right.
But I think people will enjoy the interview. I mean, it's really funny, and those guys just take over and riff all over the place.
Well, let's do it. This is recorded in November 1970. Where was it, at KPFA?
KPFK.
KPFK?
Yeah, in North Hollywood.
Listen to a young Ken Jones interview Fireside Theater. Let's do it.
Talk about the movie. What movie?
I was the one who heard it on the real Don Steele.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
The Firesign movie?
Well, there is a Firesign movie, and one of our producer, one of our producer, in fact, the one producer, our present producer, is in Europe right now, raising money in Kane. For the film,
the Sugar Trust is going to support it. That's why he's raising Cain.
It's a film which is
ever worn a Sugar Trust? Oh, excuse me, going. I'm
no.
sorry.
No,
I don't want to break in.
No, it's a film which is going to be produced. It's going to be the Firesign Theater's movie, as opposed to Zach and Ryan, which we just worked on it. And it will probably happen, but we don't know when. We don't have any definite go date on it yet. We are writing it, but we haven't put anything on paper yet.
Yes, we put a little on paper. We got the opening on paper, first
yeah.
eight pages, and it's a. It
What's
is
the working title?
The working title, Casablanca.
Oh, come on, Peter.
Oh, no.
Firesign Theater presents Eat.
That's the working title.
What was the movie you made in New York when you had the show on KPPC? You called up every week.
Yeah, that was A Safe Place with Tuesday
New York,
World and Orson Welles. And yes, and Peter Behrman, and he directed it. Peter Behrman.
Claude
Loop. Yeah, he did the looping. Henry Jaglom wrote the film and directed it also.
Played the wolf.
Yeah. And that was that's going to be out in 6 months or something like that.
How'd you guys get together?
How did we get together? Oh, that's through science, believe it or not. Yeah, is that we all four of us had a job out here in the place called Scientific Research that does all the
computer dating
and stuff like that.
Zippo dating.
It was called Zippo Dating Service. Anyway, it was changed then to Van Nuys Coeducational something. I don't remember the name.
Dog breeding.
Yeah. The four of us were working without knowing that the other three members were in the Firesign Theater. It was really weird, man. We had no consciousness of it.
We sat at desks behind
one another,
right? Separated by plexiglass.
Right. We used to meet on the radio, man. It was really weird because it shows you what unconsciousness is like when you're living in that kind of a state. We do a radio show together every Sunday but wouldn't be aware of the fact that we were the Firesign Theater as we met 5 days a week at work. Only on the weekends did it begin to dawn on us that we were creative and free, and then
Radio
we just...
Radio Free Odd? Was that the name of that show?
Radio Free Odd, right. Yeah. O.D., right.
That was on a crummy little listener-subscribe station called
KPF-K.
I think it was on KNX.
KNX, yeah. TV, yeah, it was a TV show, but we used to do it on the radio because we just couldn't produce a show like that when you're carrying a job all right. week, you know, trying to match dogs and things.
And in those times, there was so little television that the visuals were really, like, unimportant.
We used to hold slides up and things like that.
Besides that, we didn't have anything else to do. That explains it, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's the origin of the Firesign Theater, the title?
The title?
Yeah.
Well, we're all fire signs except for Pete and David and Phil.
Yeah. But Phil Proctor is a Virgo.
Yeah.
And actually, the name...
Keeps him pure.
Yeah, the name. It's an old name, actually. The Firesign Theater was... It's kind of a direct translation of a group that was extant about 400 years ago in England.
You used to do radio shows then.
Right.
The Fireside, they used to mispronounce it as the Fireside Theater during the war. Because you weren't allowed to say sign. Sign
was before the vowel shift, remember?
Yes.
It went from Fireside to Fireside, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was the silent R that did it.
That's right. That's what brought us down, finally, you know, because we went to Ent the Theater, and the silent R kept us from really getting it.
It was Ilya,
yeah.
Tough time.
Yeah.
Idon!
Daddy-o!
Fight on, he used to beat us up.
Yeah, right.
Idon.
Yeah. Akinol!
Yeah, Akinol.
Oh, the silent...
Evolution, right.
Yeah, the silent...
Up the evolution!
Right,
he used to cry.
Do you have any goals when you were in
college? We made three goals in the first game.
Sure.
Four in the second, and Phil kicked a goal against Tottenham Trust.
Yeah, he never got up again.
No, he didn't.
I had some goals and chickens that I used to raise.
Orange Nell was the only gull that I ever knew.
Orange Hill.
Orange Hill, excuse me. That's what we called the last game up against Nottingham.
I took some Orange Hill the other day.
This fucking trip out of sight.
Orange Hill, that's
Orange
got 45% strychnine, 35% inert gas, and 1% LSD-13.
Changed the color of his eyes.
Yes, sure did.
Dotted his eyes, motherfucker.
I walked on it.
You did?
Yes.
Yeah, well,
comes in a big tablet. You crush it up, wiggle it on the floor, walk on it, comes up through the bottoms of your feet.
Oh, far out. Acupuncture acid, man. Far fucking out. I'm using words like that now because you can always edit them out, but on the radio I couldn't say far fucking out, even for comic effect. I couldn't say to Phil far fucking out.
No.
Because then they get really upset.
You have to say far fascist.
Far fascist out, or far ducking out, if you dig what I mean.
Yeah, correct.
See, the letter has been taken.
No, if you fig what I mean.
If you fig what I mean. Yeah, because the letter has been taken.
How about the letter
N?
The
letter has
been taken out of the fucking...
Fucking alphabet, you know, alphabet, right?
Alphabet,
right? The C Commission, the CC Commission, right? Took the letter. They said now people's spades are yelling, "Oh the pigs! Oh the pigs!"
Aaron Pike,
or 51,
right?
The Poo Sepikrit Lapanga page.
How'd you get the contract with Columbia?
They took out a contract on us. It was a mistake. Yeah,
there was Charlie Ripazzuto, the welder, took out a contract on us. And somehow the legal department misunderstood it because there was an Irishman, a potato, who was taking over for Bandini, I think it was Carlo the Kid Bandini, right, who went on a vacation.
Carlo the Kid Glove Bandini.
The Kid Glove Bandini, yeah. Right. He's
with
the green,
with the Vaseline on the left hand.
Yeah, right. He went on. So we got a contract with Columbia through, what was his name?
Gary the House of Usher,
who was our first producer.
He was the house producer.
Right. He was the usher, is what it was, and he worked his way up there.
Place that we were all right.
And Phil Austin also did a record called Uckman.
And it was
Uckman. And that was how we got in, because we had to protect him after that record was released from assaults.
Phil never told us about it at the dating service, you know. We used to come in unconscious on Monday after doing a great show together on Sunday night and recognize each other only as work compatriots. I'd say, like, Comrade David. Right. How's your wife?
And the reason we were all four together, as far as the computer dating service was concerned, was because we were the only four people who didn't fill out the forms at all.
Oh, that's right.
You see, so there was no way of knowing anything about us, and they decided that the four of us would then obviously make the best group. However, four was an unusual number for them to deal with, as you can understand. It's never been done before.
They've never had a four-man date before. You know, that was before Gay Lubrication.
Which of your albums was your favorite?
Which albums was our favorite?
I think probably...
First one, Sentimental Favorite.
Sentimental favorite
goes to Waiting for the Electrician. Let's all hear a big answer.
My favorite album, and Phil's too, I think, if I can speak for him, is Travelin' with the Fire Sign Theater.
Traveling. You can speak for me anytime you want, Pete.
Okay, Larry. Travelin' and also Down Broadway with the Fire Sign Theater. Right. Yeah, that's probably my favorite, personally.
Bubbles in My Vein.
We have a new album coming out.
Short-lived success.
We're coming out with... We're coming down with... what is the name of the new album?
Don't Crush That Porridge Bird.
Right. Lift up the Electrician.
The Crankcase. What was it? No, it was...
Hand him the Electrician.
Why do the porridge bird lay his eggs in the air?
Egg in the air.
His egg in the air. Why do the porridge bird lay his egg in the air? That's the next album.
That'll be coming out probably... in spring of next year.
Drop it on unsuspecting.
To read the review of that in Rolling Stone?
Of our new record?
Yes.
Not yet. No, you mean
sure.
The Porridge Bird record?
Not of the Porridge Bird, no, of Dwarf.
The other one. Yes. Yeah.
Rolling
read
Stone.
It. We wrote it.
Rolling Stone, man, I was at first time in my life I went to the Scandia restaurant. I gotta hear the story.
Scandia.
And I'm sitting around, they made me wear a jacket to go in. No, the guy lent me this huge rabbinical overcoat type jacket,
right? You should tell next week.
I'll tell it next week because I'm standing there at the Scandia, man. We're about to go in, sitting right near where the drunk, gay, maitre d' hotel kind of guy sitting there getting everybody into their seats,
it's
you know, with a drink in his hand, man.
He's not
sitting there. Really, just sitting there right with a drink in his hand. And I'm talking to my friend David Lazar, an old friend, and didn't know what I did.
He stinketh.
Oh,
it's Lazarus.
Well, Lazarus, right. I'd raised him up out of the grave and was talking to him. And I said, well, we're Fireside Theater. It's like a pop group, like we've been reviewed in Rolling Stone. The guy says, Nolan Stone? Nolan Sloan? This guy says, "Come, is somebody say Nolan Sloan?" I said, "No." I said, "Rolling Stone." Oh, I'm on the telephone all the time, and I thought it was for Nolan Sloan. How do you do? Nolan Sloan's in there. Well, what do you know? I'll believe it. Would you like me to take your picture? I got my camera in the car.
And he gave me his card. What did he do?
For Drinkers Magazine. He was an editor of California Drinkers Magazine, Beverage Plus. Nolan Sloan, they're tossing me out because I can't pay my bill. Really? Is that
just
your name?
Just like a Nolan Sloan.
You're invisible now. You got no secrets to confuse.
Right.
Go back and
the undrinkable dishes. Nolan Sloan. Right. When you're Nolan Sloan, just a Nolan Sloan. Nolan Sloan, just a Nolan Sloan. Oh, it was funny, man. That's never happened to me before.
No, that's
probably one again. Scandia is just a big, overpriced delicatessen, and they made me put my coat on. This coat, right? I went and I sat down, and I was hot, man, because I was wearing like my felt pants and that nice, and a vest and a shirt. And I was all done up, you know, to look as good as possible. Luckily, I had a kerchief on or something like that, or they would have made me put a tie on.
Yes, right.
So I sat down.
Tie
I was really
on.
Hot.
But
Chinese restaurant.
Head, yeah.
Right. So I took the coat off because I was so hot, and the waiter came immediately over the table and said, "Sir, I've got bad news for you." But he was French, too. It really was his spot. You must put it back on, you know? And I said,
really?
Haven't you heard about the French Revolution? He says, "I'm sorry, I only work for the man here." I said, "Achtung, I can dig it."
Yeah,
but very pleasant-like, and he just went on because I was, you know, it was a paying customer. And finally, we stayed there for like a long time. Finally, around midnight, he came over and says, "Most of the customers are gone now. You can take off your jacket." So I took off my jacket. God, I was sweating.
You may take your coat and jacket off.
That's right.
Cap and jacket. Off. Oh, that's wonderful. What else would you like to
You can take your coat, Tex, and jacket off.
Yes.
Kotex.
Kotex.
Yeah, oh, man. Hey.
Anybody can do it.
Hey, Jim.
Doctors like any black man.
Right.
Anybody can change a car from the inside out.
That's right.
They learned how to do it from their daddies.
Yeah, man.
On their phones.
And when they hear us doing it, they say, hey, they know about how we get whitey.
Yeah.
But when they tell this load to take off expensive tape time, you dig? It's closer to 5 o'clock when you take off the chains and the leg boots and they go home and have themselves some chitlin. They also have...
Children.
It was called the Negroes. You know, the Negroes was the ones that brought marijuana to us. So you can hardly accuse us of being anti-Negro.
And they rock and they roll.
And they lock and... Which beats the lock and the load, which is what the white folks bring.
I thought marijuana brought Negroes to America.
Oh, no. There was a marijuana ship. Right, great ships built of marijuana. And they used to smoke it, keel the prow, and by the time they'd get to Florida, everything was gone, including the captain.
They smoked him up.
Yes, they did. Smoked all the rope, smoked everything. Yeah, well, this is for high school. I'd like to send my deep sympathies to all people who are subjects of the compulsory education. I just want to tell that straight. I dig where you're at. I dig the fact that if you don't go to school, you go to jail and cool and all that. And that's going to end. I promise you. I won't have anything to do with ending it.
Did you go to college?
But that, I went to college. I went to jail. Yale. For 6 years.
If you don't go to school, you go to jail.
If you don't go to school, you go to jail. That's where it stands right now.
I was in jail.
Let's see. The Harvard and the prison game was on the 27th. I was in for 6 years. Of course, I was a fascist. I was a Jewish fascist on scholarship, so I thought that was just fine. Because the only other thing I could be, you dig, would be a worker. And I didn't want to go into the factory, mainly because nobody lives over 24. I think it was into a factory.
Except the drones,
yeah, and they all sit around all day going,
You call that vivid?
Yeah, right. I mean, you know, that's right. If you don't go to school, you go to jail. Now, I'm not saying that that's anything more than it is, but I sympathize with the kids who are, like, in 10th grade and have got the minds of a 30-year-old in sensibility and digging it, and they got to sit there and listen to all that bullshit, man. I mean, that's... And I talked to an 8th grader. A 14-year-old kid with the most subtle mind made me laugh. I mean, really far out, right? And he's looking forward to 4 more years of prison before he can get out. And all he does all day is hang his head and moan and wait for that time to be over. Because he's so far advanced of anything. What do they teach you, man? They don't teach you astrology. They don't teach you cooking. You know, they don't teach you how to use a wok. They don't teach you Tai Chi. I'm just telling you things that I find fascinating, right? They don't teach you anything about herbs. They don't teach you self-hypnosis. They don't teach you anything, right? All they do is keep you in. Keep you in jail, man. They just keep you in jail. If schools weren't compulsory, then kids would only go to schools if the schools were more interesting than their homes or the street. Now they ain't got no choice.
So what'd you do in Yale?
What'd I do at Yale? Oh, man, I hid out. I mean, shit, they paid me to go there, and it was... I tell you, I was a fascist, man. I believed that that was the only place I could be. The only other place was on the street, and I was scared to death of the street, man. I saw those people on the street. I said, oh, man, no good. Like, where do they sleep at night? What do they do? And, you know, that's crazy. So I went back to Yale, right? Yeah. At Yale, I was top dog, campus communist. Really cool, you know? Give me money. I had a bald head. I could walk in and say, Dean Jones, hit me with 500. Just like that, man. He'd look at my head and say, right on, Daddy, oh, you're a serious Jewish student. 12.5% of our fine university.
You're an egghead, and you look cracked.
Yeah, right.
Go on.
I hear you got radical...
You're more than 3 minutes, baby.
Yeah, right. Yes, I know that you got radical theories, he'd think in his head, but I know that you're going to go into the Donald Duck Law Firm in Indianapolis and write your book on labor called Union Now or Never, right? And I almost did, but then I'll tell you what happened. I went up to my economics teacher in graduate school. I was in graduate school and teaching there for a year. And I said, tell me, Jim... his name was Jim. Jim Teacher was his name, actually. And we were sipping coffee with potassium nitrate in it at the time, just sitting around smoking poison cigarettes. And I said, tell me, Jim... I said, now that I'm going to become a professor of economics and cum laude of the law school, why is it that men build factories so that other men can go in and lose their youth in 3 years? Why do people do that? I didn't know at the time myself. And he couldn't answer me, so I quit. That was the only question I had on my mind after 6 years at Yale, was why people fucked over other people. And nobody there could tell me why. So I quit.
Did you ever teach economics?
Yes, for a year at Yale.
So I was top of the pile.
You know how he taught economics? He'd say, all right, everybody take all the money out of your pockets and put it on the desk. Now, let's see here. Ah, here's a big bill. Okay, this is a $100 bill. Okay, now I'm putting it in my pocket. Now tell me whose face is on a $100 bill.
The electrician.
Oh, that's right. But you didn't name him properly, so I'm going to keep this. Okay, class dismissed.
Class dismissed. Get the fuck out of here. Right.
He's got a gun.
That's right. That was the economics with Bergman, right?
Right. P. Bergman. Berfman. Professor Berfman in Lawrence Hall, 104 North. Office hours were on Wednesday from 1:30 to 3. Guys used to come in and cry. Sir, you've got to pass me. And I'd say, but shit, you can't even write the English language, man. Look at this paper you're talking about. Killed anybody at Yale. I gave them all at least a passing mark.
You failed me, Peter.
Yeah, right. I failed myself internally.
Right.
Well, that's my story. Thank you, Jim.
How come you put so many local references in your records? Like Pico and Alvarado?
We live here.
Sure.
So how the whole world's a big neighborhood. Everybody's got parallels in the same, in their town. You know, all they have to do is substitute. We were thinking of putting in blank spaces there so people could substitute their own local streets, for instance. You know, but it was difficult. It threw off the timing of the record a little bit. Aces like that. You see, so he says, here comes, and up, and it didn't work. So we had to, you know, like put a substitute in a name we made up.
Boy, this is going to go on forever.
What else? Ask some more questions.
How'd you get fired from KPPC, big boy?
It was easy.
It was easy, yeah. It's a telephone call. Sure. Nothing to that. Unless Mr. Jazz Carter put on some Jerry Mulligan behind the telephone call, called us up and said, hey, Firesign Theater. Hey, listen, this is a sunny Libra day, and we're just sitting down here at the station, cooling it in our Fiat 124. And we wondered if you'd like to know that you're fired, and fuck you. Wham! That was just one of his intros.
I was fired for saying fuck
you. Fired for saying fuck you, right?
Why were we fired?
We were fired because we...
I wasn't here, so I was fired.
We confused them. We were not fired for dirty... Well, KPPC... You want the official word? KPPC, National Headquarters in New York, the Art Police or the National Science Foundation.
Right.
Sent a list of 16 rules that everybody had to observe on the station, and they looked at them and they said, well, fire sign's already broken, all 16 of them.
Right.
So they didn't even read them to us. They just fired us in advance. That's true, too.
Yeah,
never
know,
saw
I'm
that
sure.
series of rules, but it included don't say fuck you, don't hurt the state, don't talk about the president unless he's on the show and has a chance to respond.
Right.
And the time we had him on the show, all he did was cry. Remember?
Oh, right.
So...
That's... He had some of that orange hell.
Yeah, all right. There must be a hell in there.
He makes it.
He makes it, right. The president of the United States is one of the largest makers of LSD in the country, and nobody is aware of that except a small circle of fiends inside the White House. He turned on all of his advisors, you know. That's why the war is over in Cambodia. Right.
What's your politics?
What's my politics?
Yeah, concerning the United States.
The what? That's my politics.
Do you try to keep it out of your albums?
I try to keep it to myself as much as possible, you know. Because you can't expose your politics in the streets or you get busted. You just can't open up the flyer of the body politic and just show your politics to everybody, you know? When times get hard, I mean, your politics have got to remain hidden. Do you know what I mean, Jim?
What do you mean?
I don't know, Jim. What do you mean?
What do you mean?
You're mean.
Did you all want to be in creative occupations?
Yep.
Yep. Someday.
I wanted to be a pubic speaker. But
get a job.
I couldn't
get a job.
Get a job.
Get a job.
That was it.
But,
that was it. It went into get a job.
Fuse of doom. Fuse of doom.
They didn't like the way I look.
Up against the walleye, motherfucker.
Right. He's the only man I know who's ever masticated openly.
Huh?
What?
Well, this is the famous comedian school, and Pugsley there has just tried to go up against the great.
That was a three, Pugsley. That was a three.
That was a great silence there.
Oh, thank you.
Well, let's see if you got any other questions for us. If you want to know who my favorite singing star is.
Okay.
You want to know who my favorite singing star is?
Carnew Pjorts.
Your influences in comedy.
Our influences in comedy?
Groucho Marx, I know, must
have
been.
Carlman.
Good chance to mention Bob and Ray.
Bob and Ray, absolutely right.
Henry Morgan. For me personally, man, those two people.
Ernie Kovacs, the Goon Shows.
The Marx Brothers, later on. I didn't know about the Marx Brothers when I was a kid. I didn't see any of their movies. What other things? Maybe Mr. Hulot's Holiday, Jacques Tati.
Jacques Tati.
I always thought about him for making comic movies.
Pinky Lee.
I never saw Pinky Lee, except the time he had a heart attack. No, you saw him get a heart attack.
I threw him out.
You threw him out?
You threw Pinky out?
I threw him out.
Oh, mother. Mother of God.
That's all I can think of right off the bat. Oh, yeah, there was a guy that you've never heard of, but who is now an owner of a radio station in South Carolina named Bob Gale, who used to have a radio show in Cleveland called The Gale House. And he'd do things like run a sound effect of water for like 45 minutes on his show while he was talking and slowly let you know that the studio was filling up with water, and then seagulls would begin to appear. He'd do these long radio jokes.
Who's a cat on the radio? Shepard.
I never heard of him.
Gene Shepard. Yeah. Gene Shepard, in New York. He had something to do with it.
The Night People.
Yeah, he did some nice things on radio.
Alan Freed, when he was in Cleveland as Moondog, turned me on to kind of shouting on the radio and having fun.
I saw some of your ads in the National Lampoon.
You did? I haven't seen them. I don't know. I haven't seen them.
So you don't read it, so that's there goes the question.
Well, we're not in prison anymore, you see. We don't
Princeton.
Princeton, right. No. National Lampoon, no, we haven't bought that. I haven't seen it, no.
Is it a good ad?
No.
No?
Where?
What does it say? 1984, 15 years ahead of its time, that ad? Yeah, that they're running
and
all.
Reveals the future.
Yeah. Reveals the future. Well, that's just, we've made no attempt to control our advertising in Columbia. We would control our advertising.
We did make an attempt, but it didn't go
anywhere. We could have. See, like, for example, if we really wanted to make a point of it, we could demand that we do the ads. But but to tell you the truth, there isn't anybody out there who believes that the Firesign Theater's albums or any album has anything to do with its advertising. Nothing. There couldn't be a connection, because they're not the same thing. It's like saying, my picture on the album, that caricature, is me. That's crazy to say, because it's not. It's a drawing. Just like an advertisement is just that. It's an advertisement.
Lucky it isn't. People have to follow you around with a bucket and a shovel.
Yeah, right. Do you know that there's no advertisement that ever says, this is a bad album, or it's a mediocre album that we wouldn't recommend to anybody, basically, and we're only putting out this because...
As far as I can, they just put out another bomb, but buy it anyway, because it's from Columbia!
Right, or this advertising space is guaranteed by contract with Firesign Theater after selling 50,000 albums, so we're putting it in. We here at the agency are not very enthused about the album. Perhaps we don't understand it. It doesn't make any difference to us if you buy it or not, because the sales are minute compared to the entire Columbia complex, which also owns educational toys, Fender, Rogers drums, you know, things, etc. I mean, you never see that. You always see,
it's great. It's on plastic. It'll knock you dead. Strychnine. Play it now. Your head will fall off later.
The only advantage to an advertisement is it announces to the public who haven't heard otherwise by word of mouth, which is really powerful, that you've got a new album out. It's the only thing.
Advertising is hypothetical, see? Everything is hype. It's true. In New York, if you see the theater in New York now, it's become totally absurd because the hype is so rampant. In front of a mediocre play or even a poor play or musical comedy, there are these extraordinary, I shit with laughter, you know. I fell off my chair and threw up in the aisles, you know. They just say hyperbole, and it doesn't mean anything because you go
hyperbole?
In and you yawn, hyperbole. That's a Super Bowl, but it's the next step up. Better than the Super Bowl, bigger than cheese, hyperbole.
Smaller
it's
than your finger in a Brit box.
Right, you know. I mean, hype is taken for what it is.
Homes.
It's true.
Do you agree with the review that you read over there? That no album?
That review? Do we agree with it?
More science in high schools and all that.
No. That's why we read it. I mean, it was an interesting assumption.
Right.
It was Fakak. It was an interesting assumption on the album, but it wasn't. No, it's not exactly what we interpreted it as. But you know, each interpretation, like Chinese thinking, is an aspect of the whole. And if we could find the whole, we might be able to make a donut. Our interpretation is the record. I mean, that is it. The record is our interpretation. That is what our interpretation is. I mean, it's quite clear to us. It is revealed. It is revealed in listening and in getting the feedback from people who hear it what the album contains. But we know pretty generally what it contains, and we all agreed on that.
You ever lip synced the record?
Yeah, we did an American Top 40 show 2 weeks ago, and we lip synced. What were we doing? We lip synced part of Nick Danger. And the kids just loved it, man. At the end, there was this tremendous applause, which then died down as the ad came in. It's pretty good. Let me ask you one question. You're at Hamilton High School, right, and also at UCLA. Do you run across many people in high school who are aware of the Firesign Theater?
No.
Well, you see, there in our
just
power
one
lies.
Just in front of me in one class.
There you go, man. If we have two people in every high school in this country.
You have 10 in mine.
You have 10 in yours, right. And The high schools is where our albums are going, man. That's what this album is about. It's about high school, Dwarf Elf. Really, you know, among other things, it's about high school. And
I can't identify with a high school getting stolen.
Oh, yes, you can. You don't want to go to... wouldn't it be wonderful if you went to school one day and your high school wasn't there?
We locked 1,500 people in our gym on Friday, and that's the closest I've ever gotten to it.
Well, that's locking them in.
That's close, locking them in, man. That's close, though. Don't take off your shoes. Yeah, if there was no school, man. Well, that's just my own pet thing. That only represents Peter Bergman.
Yeah, but your high school in the record wasn't what my high school is. Hamilton is.
It wasn't. 20. Do you like Hamilton High School?
Well, I don't like school anyway.
Okay, good. Well, then it was like Porgy. He wanted to get out also. He didn't like it, right?
I remember
the reason you're in the school didn't work.
Grow his hair long.
See, you mustn't take everything on face value. Just because everything is a parable. You see, I mean, your whole life is a parable. Everything is an assumption of what you think it is.
That's right.
And so the school represents the system because it is a closed institution which prepares you for the system and therefore has to be a copy of the system.
If you keep talking like that, I'm going to turn the tape recorder off. I just am.
Afraid of the truth, aren't you,
Brad? You bet, man. Scared to death. Your truth, man. Because your truth is real truth. And I'm afraid of real truth.
You're afraid of real truth.
I am nothing I am more afraid of than real truth.
Because it changes every week. You know
every week, man.
And it's hard to keep up with it.
Oh, yes, man. It's frightening.
I'd like to sell you a subscription to 550,000 magazines and newspapers.
No, really. For how much? Will it send you back to college? Anything to send you back to college.
A nickel a day. It's all it'll cost you for the rest of your life. You're right on the
minutes a year.
Let me just puncture your vein. Ah! There you are.
Ah, stickler for success, huh?
Okay, here's a stack of them now. Bring the truck up, Charlie. Dump them on this joker over here. Reach your way out of that, sucker.
Get educated.
I think that's
enough. What's your idea of escaping?
What's my ID?
Just one last question.
Here's my ID, man. What?
Idea of escaping the system. Become a member of the Fireside Theater?
Ignore it. I escaped the system finally by not fighting it, by not confronting it, simply by saying, well, that's not what I'm into, you know, and so I'm into the Fireside Theater. I'm into this right now. I mean, what's happening right here is not... has no relevance to so-called murder in the streets and revolution and problems in the Near East and starving people in India and Bayonne and all that.
It's very little that you do does.
Right. My life is very happy in that sense. I am brought down only when the air gets bad. It makes me uneasy and confused. But when the air is clean, even in the city with the noise, I'm not basically unhappy. I have my friends and I have my art. And art is just living. It's not anything special. Everybody's got it. If you wanted to be the Fireside Theater, you could be the Fireside Theater, really. All you have to do is be it. We were just four guys who 4 years ago decided that that's what we were. That's all you just decided. That's what we are.
What happens if you become successful?
Well, we are successful, man. We have been successful for quite a while now. We live off of our record royalties, and there are very few people in the country who do. We live off our record royalties like poor men. And believe me, there's no problem with wealth, nor is there a bummer in being poor or having a moderate income. Because we get along just fine. We live like princes, which is what a hippie is. A hippie is a poor man living like a rich man. A middle-class honky is a rich man living like a poor man.
Because he's in debt.
He's in debt, man. He goes from day to day and I say, why don't you free yourself, which is none of my business to begin with. And he says, I'd like to, and I believe him, but I owe $7,000 to the bank. And I say to myself,
my wife,
that's
my
real.
Children.
Yeah, I remember when I owed money, and I was not free. I decided, you know, I couldn't leave town. Right? I'd have to become a criminal to leave town, just like you'd have to become a criminal to leave school. So the Fireside Theater is very successful. The fact that in the next 10 years we will be nationally known is going to have little effect upon our private lives because our image, or not even our image, our reality is not the type that would make you go, you know, cream over us. We are not like the early Beatles, I've been saying for the last couple weeks, because in this period we don't dress alike. We don't all have the same suit and the same haircut and a manager who tells us where to go and a studio we have to go into. And, you know,
we wear the same color underwear, but nobody sees that.
Yeah, right. They can't see through us. We have a different... Look at the different line, the four of us, man. We don't look like the same person, and yet we can become the same person. So our privacy is guaranteed, our intimacy. When we play a concert, we talk with the people afterwards because there's nobody running up on stage with guns or screaming at us. It's just, you know, it's been a happy evening.
Or throwing jelly babies
at us. Right, throwing jelly babies at us. We've never had to off anybody in the audience yet. No, it's true. The Fireside Theater, just because of the way we are, has yet to have to hire the Hell's Angels to protect us against those 16-year-old high school girls with glasses in the front row with notebooks. Watch out, that girl's got a notebook!
The worst things that people have ever thrown at us are joints.
Right, man, right.
Right, that's about it.
Right, lead joints. Right. Pipe nipples, joints. Irradiated joints, too. But that's the most, man. Like, we haven't, indeed. Where a concert is over and the police are walking out, you know, like the hall police, right? And people are coming up and giving us joints and handing out hash and people coming up, yeah, right, and asking for a light and lighting up these long 8-foot joints, right? Everybody's sitting on clouds of smoke. We are unbustable simply because we're not revolutionary. We don't confront anybody. We don't get on the radio and say, all white men are pigs and all black men are good and all spics are undervaluated, right, and all Jews are intelligent and up against the wall and all that bullshit. We just have a good time. So we project.
The quality of laughter is what Mr. Breckman is trying to say, the quality of laughter.
I can't pronounce the
people
letter.
People, when their mouths are open and they're laughing and you look inside the mouth, it looks the same for everybody. There's no color change inside the mouth.
No, none. Except laughing. Cats.
The sound of laughter is not, you know, in any language. In Russia, ha ha ha. In my language, it's the same sound, basically, that we are hearing. This laughter is
in America, ha ha ha.
You are laughing together. Ha ha. There's somebody choking you, maybe you're thinking, but you are seeing, we are laughing.
Because of the hot curry going down. When you laugh, you know, you eat.
Oh, that's
the only time you can
fun.
Eat.
You're laughing.
The only time you can eat in India is when you laugh. And that's why when there is no laughing, there is starvation.
Sure.
It's very simple.
And that was it. That was the interview conducted in November of 1970 by our own Ken Jones, and he's right there.
Hey, Rich. Boy, thanks for playing that.
That was fantastic. That thanks for bringing premiere. It. That yeah. was amazing. So outside of here now, was that heard anywhere else, really?
Never played, never broadcast. I distributed some cassettes among some friends, and I don't know what they did with those. Probably recorded over them.
Yeah, they could have. Maybe... You never know. That was fantastic. So you were 17 years old. That had to be pretty awe-inspiring.
I was just such a fan of the Firesign Theater and, kind of naive enough just to figure I could call them up and go down there and talk with them.
Of course, they said yes.
Yeah, the premise was I was really in love with radio. So I wanted to do a radio show, but my high school, as most high schools, public high schools, don't have radio stations.
Right.
So I made this deal with the supervisor, the teacher who supervised the ham radio club. He had access to the PA system for the school. So I actually recorded some radio shows, and including the interview, and we would play them over the PA system during lunch.
Wow.
Not that anybody was listening. So you'd have all this kind of noise, coming out right. While people were eating their burgers and drinking their Cokes and stuff like that.
That give you some kind of notoriety in school? As the
nobody radio. Listened and nobody cared. So
it's
absolutely
radio.
No notoriety. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was actually good preparation for radio.
Yes, huh? Radio's a heartbreak, as the first thing. Theater would say.
So that was the premise. So I told the Firesign Theater, I was going to do a radio show in high school, and that's what they were talking about there.
Oh, yeah. Peter Bergman just loved community radio, so I can imagine that he would totally be receptive to that whole thing.
Those guys were, extremely nice, welcoming, supportive. I just can't say enough nice
things.
Yeah,
they love KBOO. I mean, when we've had them down here, it's pretty obvious how much they love KBOO and community radio in general.
Yeah, I was told that they visited a few months before Peter Bergman died.
That's right.
He died about a year or so ago. But KBOO was probably one of his last radio appearances, and I think Portland was one of their last live appearances as a group.
Well, their appearance together on the air at KBOO was their last radio appearance together.
Oh, my.
And we'll probably play that in the future. So, yeah, don't despair. I mean, we will be playing Firesign in the future, I'm sure, during pledge drives and specials. And Firesign will always crop up on late night radio. That's a given. That's its natural habitat. So don't despair about the lack of Firesign on the radio. But you brought us another surprise, Ken.
Another world premiere. I think it's never been brought. Well, actually, it was broadcast a few years later. Again, I loved radio, so I was going to Stanford University, and they have a radio station there, KZSU, which actually had a decent listenership. And I had a radio show there, total Firesign imitation. It was a satire show called Government Radio.
Oh, wow.
And the premise was, the government had taken over the radio station, and
right.
They were playing what they wanted you, the listener, to hear. So the Firesign Theater made a visit to Stanford to play there. They played a lot of colleges. And we got them in the studio at KZU, and they did some promos for the station, KZSU, and also for the show Government Radio.
And so that's what you have here?
Yeah.
And these are a little rough in that they don't start cleanly, but that's the beauty of radio. It's kind of like unfurling a tape that's been buried forever. So let's hear some of that now.
Testing. Hello. Testing. 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 Testing.
Hi, this is Phil Proctor of the Frankenstein Theater. Oh, excuse me. Oh, yeah. Let's take that again. Hi, this is Phil Proctor of the Firesign Theater, and when I'm in the Stanford area, and any time I'm in Connecticut, I always listen to the... Oh, really? Oh, excuse me, just a second. Hi, this is Phil Proctor of the Firesign Theater. When I'm in Stanford, I always listen to KZSU, Kazoo, 90.1 on your FM dial, but for you, 89.99. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to know, and I really mean this, that when I'm in Stanford, I always listen to Government Radio, and you've got to do it too. That's Guft Government Radio. Thank you. Thanks a
lot. Ken Jones. Hi. Hi. Well, we're all high. And this is Phil Proctor of the Firesign Theater. I'm talking to Ken Jones, and he's telling me what kind of radio show he likes to listen to. Ken, what is the name of the program you listen to most and enjoy the most?
Government Radio, Phil.
Well, I'm a member of the Firesign Theater, Ken. I've done a lot of radio myself, and I know that there's a problem with censorship eking freely on the radio, and I want to know what the program that you do, whether you can speak freely.
No, Phil, we can't say FCC on my program.
Ah, yes, the F-CC is a lot of things, hasn't it?
That's right.
Well, whenever I'm in this area, you can bet your... I'll be listening to your show, Government Radio. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you, Phil.
Something about the coloring book?
Yeah, it's the Deputy Dan coloring book. We're going to read it to the kids.
I'm going to help translate this. This is a publication for school children, and it's in Spanish.
Sí. Oh, boy, this is going to be good.
Mi nombre es Deputy Dan, del Departamento del Sheriff, del Condado de Los Angeles.
My name is Deputy Dan, and I work for the sheriff of that's a very strange word.
Condado
there.
De Los Angeles.
I work for the sheriff of the jail of Los Angeles.
Deputy Dan nos dice, nunca suban a carros de personas extrañas.
Don't get into any strange cars with Deputy Dan. What that says there.
Les enseña a cuidarse por las calles.
Deputy Dan will walk small Chinese children across the street.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Is that nice?
Deténgase, mire, escuche, antes de cruzar la calle.
Run like hell when you cross the street, because Deputy Dan is after you. That's for that's the ghettos.
That's a good one. No siga la pelota hacia la calle.
Now, this is a very interesting... This is linguistic here. The translation of that might be let's rock and roll or let the dance go on. Word for word, it's don't follow the balls when they make the street. It's very hard to translate literally from Spanish.
Don't follow the balls when they make the street.
Something like that. It's,
obedeza las leyes para su seguridad.
You better obey all the laws, or they'll put you in security prison.
Right on!
Deputy Dan nos ayuda cuando estamos golpeados.
Deputy Dan will knock us down when we're injured by a car. I think is what that is.
Deputy Dan, terrible.
Ay, si nos perdemos.
This is a shot of naked children, or almost naked children, being picked up by a police helicopter way up in the mountains where they've gone. That's Deputy Dan will find us no matter how far away we go. It's a translation of that.
Deputy Dan is su amigo.
Deputy Dan. Scary. Deputy Dan.
Has no friends.
Has no friends.
I know enough Spanish. I know him personally, sir.
Right. That's very good.
Finally, no le abran las puertas a personas extrañas.
Never open the door for Deputy Dan. He's on the other side.
He doesn't have to knock anymore, you know, Deputy
That's
Dan.
A wonderful publication.
Hi, boys and girls. I'm Peter Pitcher, sheriff of Los Angeles County.
He doesn't have to knock anymore, and Deputy Dan has no friends. So, taking the place of Fireside Theater Radio Hour is what? I'm joined here now by Josh and Twilight.
Twilight. Yes.
Now we're just nervous. Yes, we'll be taking the place of Fireside Theater for the foreseeable future with our own amusing radio show. What's it called, Twilight? I've forgotten. I'm nervous.
Puppet Radio Theater.
Puppet Radio Theater.
Yes. Cool. Puppets on the radio. It's an idea whose time has come.
It is an idea that whose time has come. We think that Edgar Bergen, Charlie McCarthy, they dropped the ball by dying, basically.
Yes, and you could put in the Sunday paper a picture of your puppets so that the kids at home can...
Yes, we're using them for promotional purposes.
Right. You're using the puppets for promotional purposes.
We're using them for promotional purposes, yes.
So what are you planning on doing on the show?
What we have is Puppet Radio Theater is a sketch comedy show with a series of traditional sketches that we've written and performed with some greatly talented people here at KBOO. And then we create them, we put them on discs, and then the theater is hijacked by two scurrilous puppets.
Wow, it's like the Puppet Liberation Organization.
They're
Marxist. We
can neither confirm nor deny if they're members.
Hazel, I believe, is apolitical, but Floyd, however, is...
Floyd has intense opinions.
He's a Marxist, quite frankly, and we can't talk him out of it.
Right. Well, that you found the perfect home.
Don't denigrate me, you bastard!
Hey, it's a puppet. There's a puppet here.
Anyway, so tune in next week. All these guys are going to be gone. We're just taking over the station from everybody.
No, Monday's at 10 p.m.
Monday's at 10 p.m. There's going to be music. There's going to be comedy sketches. It's going to be jocularity of all sorts.
Well, that'll be fun. And are you alternating with the show, or are you on every week?
Alternating? First Mondays of every month.
Oh, wow.
First Monday of every month.
Fantastic.
So take your kids out of school. If the kids are asleep, wake them up. Give them coffee.
Give them coffee. Make them stay up late.
All right. That's enough out of you, pal.
Yeah, put them back in the bag.
Back in the bag.
Well, that sounds like fun. So, yeah, so next week will be your debut show.
Next week will be our pilot show. The show is called International, a.k.a. MacArthur Park. And, comedy sketches, music, and a good time will be had by all.
Well, that sounds cool. I think I'm going to play us out with a little bit more Fire Sign. And,
awesome.
This will be kind of our send-off for Fire Sign Theater on KBOO.
We're sorry, Phil.
Sorry, Phil.
And thanks for Ken for that amazing interview.
We told that while he was on the radio
show. Let it be told!
Is that true? Because I have here a paper that says Germany surrenders from 1918, and is bringing up father. And let me read you the bringing up father.
Mayor, just a second. Let me turn back the hands of time here. Right. Mayor, drop your LaGuardia. Here he is, reading the news and the views
to the
Jews.
Your papers, kids. To Monday, November 11th, 1918, the San Francisco Examiner. Now, up at the top, it's bringing up father. In the first panel here, you've got Maggie reading a letter to Jiggs, who's seated down. He doesn't have his shoes on, as usual, and he's smoking his little butt of a cigar, and he's in his underwear. And she says,
"Here's a letter from our son in France."
And then he says,
"His next letter will be from Berlin."
And in the next box there, he's got the letter and is looking kind of puzzled, and Maggie's saying,
"He's just like you. I told him to wear his heavy socks and woolens in the trenches and keep bundled up."
In the next caption box here, she's writing furiously at the desk, and he's standing kind of disgruntled in his stocking feet a little off to the side, and she's saying,
"I write him again. He must do as I tell him."
To which Jig says,
"Why do you keep nagging at the boy?"
Then Maggie really is shocked at this. She's got little lines coming out of her head and the pen suspended in midair, like out in space. We don't know about that yet. And Jiggs is real, real mad there, and he's all scrunched up. He's got his hand in his pocket, and he says,
"Why don't you let him enjoy the war?"
Dropping whistles again.
They later became millionaires, too. I mean, they became millionaires. Dagwood lost his...
A funny thing happened to me this morning on the way to the Inquisition.
Oh, what? I might ask you.
I saw there was a man flayed and beaten outside on the public square.
What?
And I walked right up to the man and I said, "Dear friends, why are you here?" And he said to me, he said, "Pastor, you know, it's a funny thing. For many years I've been up on this cross and I thought, you know, golly, Pastor, I thought I'd never get down, and I've begun to get discouraged."
No.
"I thought I'd never return again."
Sounds like a doubter to me, Ray.
By golly, it's true. And I've seen a lot of these fellas in my time, in my work in the prisons.
Yep.
with the dope addicts.
Yep.
I seen these before, and I said to him, fella, Bob, who was his name, lumber executive, I said, Bob, don't you think the guy...
Well, dear folks, that was more fun than watching the TV, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was nice.
Dear friends,
I wanted to say that I think being on the radio is more fun than watching TV, too.
Thank you. TV, too. I watch TV 4, except I live in the hills and I can't get it.
You have to watch it in the hills.
For what?
Sure.
Good night, you guys.
You're listening to the sound of my voice. I can read news. Today in Southeast Portland, a firefighter rescued a kitten trapped in a well. For more, we go to KBOO reporter Joe Meyer. I can do theater. I can talk like me. I can go back to commercial voice. I can do all this at KBOO Community Radio. You can, too. Come to our next volunteer orientation on Tuesday,